All afternoon the wind sifted out of the Black Welsh glens, crying notice that winter was come sliding down over the world from the pole. And Riverwood, there was the faint moaning of new ice. It was a sad day, a day of grey unrest, of discontent. The gently moving air seemed to be celebrating the loss of some gay thing with a soft, tender elegy. But in the pastures, great workhorses nervously stamped their feet, and all through the country small brown birds in cliques of four or five flew twittering from tree to tree and back again, seeking and calling in recruits for their southing. A few goats clambered to the tops of high lone rocks and long stared upward with their yellow eyes and sniffed the heavens. The afternoon passed slowly, procession-like, with an end of evening. And on the heels of the evening, an excited wind rushed out, rustled in the dry grasses, and fled whimpering across the fields. Night drew down like a black cowl, and Holy Winter sent his nuncio to Wales. Beside the high road which lined the valley, ran up through a cleft in the hills, and so out into the world, there stood an ancient farmhouse, built of heavy stones and thatched. The Morgan, who had built it, played against time and nearly won. Inside the house a fire was burning on the hearth, an iron kettle hung over the blaze, and a black iron oven hid in the coals which fell about the edges of the flame. The brisk firelight glinted on the tips of long-handled pikes in racks upon the walls, weapons unused in the 100 years since Morgan clamoured in Glendower's ranks and trembled with rage at the flinty lines of Iolo Goch. The wide brass bindings of a great chest which stood in a corner sucked in the light and glowed resplendently. Papers there were in the chest, and parchments, and stiff, untanned skins written in English and Latin and the old Cymric tongue. Morgan was born, Morgan was married, Morgan became a knight, Morgan was hanged. Here lay the history of the house, shameful and glorious. But the family was few now, and little enough likely to add records to the chest, other than the simple chronicle, Morgan was born and died. There was old Robert, for instance, sitting in his high-backed chair, sitting and smiling into the fire. His smile was perplexity and a strange passive defiance. You would have said he sought to make that fate which was responsible for his being a little ashamed of itself by smiling at it. Often he wearily considered his existence, ringed around with little defeats which mocked it as street children torment a cripple. It was strange to old Robert that he, who knew so much more than his neighbours, who had pondered so endlessly, should be not even a good farmer. Sometimes he imagined he understood too many things ever to do anything well. And so old Robert sipped the burned ale of his own experimenting and smiled into the fire. His wife would be whispering excuses for him, he knew, and the labourers in the fields removed their hats to Morgan, not to Robert. Even his aged mother, Gwenliana, here beside him, shivering to the fire as though the very wind sounds about the house called in the cold to her, was not so judged incompetent. In the cottages there was a little fear of her and a great respect. Any day when she sat in the garden, holding her necromantic court, you might see some tall farm lad blushing and hugging his hat across his chest while he listened to Gwenliana's magic. For many years now she had been practicing the second sight and taking pride in it. And though the family knew her prophecies to be whole guesses, whose shrewdness grew less sharp with her years, they listened to her with respect and simulated awe and asked of her the location of lost things. When after one of her mystic recitations the scissors were not discovered under the second board of the shed floor, they pretended to find them there anyway. For had she lost the robe of augury, there would have remained only a little wrinkled old woman soon to die. This play of clack to a simpleton was a harsh tax on the convictions of Mother Morgan. It outraged her nature, for she was one who had apparently come into the world to be a scourge to all foolishness. Such matters, as had so obviously no connection, either with the church or with the prices of things, were plainly nonsense. Old Robert had loved his wife so well and so long that he could think sharp things about her, and her thoughts could not injure his affection. When she had come home this afternoon, raging over the price of a pair of shoes she hadn't wanted anyway, he had considered, "A life is like a book crowded with mighty events. Every day she rises to the peak of some tremendous climax which has to do with buttons or a neighbour's wedding. I think that when true tragedy comes in upon her, she will not see it over her range of anthills. Perhaps this is luck," he thought, and then, "I wonder now how she would compare the king's own death with the loss of one of the sow's red pigs." Mother Morgan was too busy with the day itself to be bothered with the foolishness of abstractions. Someone in the family had to be practical, or the thatch would blow away. And what could you expect of a pack of dreamers like Robert and Gwenliana and her son Henry? She loved her husband with a queer mixture of pity and contempt born of his failings and his goodness. Young Henry, her son, she worshipped, though of course she could not trust him to have the least idea of what was to his benefit or conducive to his health. And all of the family loved Mother Morgan, and feared her, and got in her way.